It's The Record on KUOW. I'm Marcy Silman. It's been exactly 1 week since kids in Seattle went back to school. Nobody was sure school would start until the day before classes when the teachers' union approved their contract. Issues over class size, pay, testing, and teacher assessments were contentious during negotiations, and they may continue to be contentious in some areas. And what does that mean for the school year itself? Jose Banda joins us now. He's superintendent of the Seattle School District. And as he pointed out to me just before we went on the air, 1 year and 1 month that you've been in the job or so.
More or less.
Well, I want to talk about the biggest contentious issue, which was how we assess our teachers and whether we use standardized testing from the kids to measure their performance. What was the outcome at the end of all the conversation?
At the end of the conversation, and then as part of the agreement, the student growth stayed in as part of the evaluation, teacher's evaluation. In other words, looking at student achievement rates to see whether students are performing at you know, expected levels or above expected levels. And then also what that does is it triggers a closer look for the principal to look at the teacher, and then also look at how they might be able to provide some supports for that teacher.
That's not the sole measure of a teacher's performance, though.
No. That's just one piece of it, and it's just really, again, it's an indicator. There's no weight to the student growth as it is in some other large urban school districts, but it's just a trigger. It's just an indicator that says that we need to take a closer look, maybe more observations, be able to sit down with the teacher and go through an inquiry process where we try to determine if there's additional supports that need to be provided.
There are a battery of standardized tests at this point in time, some of which will change as new federal core tests move in to replace some of the older ones we've been using. And you have been a supporter of some of the information that you get from standardized testing. Not everybody agrees with you. Why do you believe it's important?
Well, when we look at standards-based assessments, and that's based on how a student performs on standards-based instruction and curriculum, it's a good information piece. I mean, how do we know what a student needs specifically in terms of instruction, in terms of supports, than looking at some data pieces or data points that say this student is lacking in some areas, and here's where we can provide the most targeted interventions or support to help them learn. So I think for me, data is an informational piece. It's a tool that could be very useful to be able to monitor our students' progress and be able to help them reach their maximum potential.
Last year, teachers at Garfield sparked a district-wide protest about one test in particular, the measures of academic progress, the MAP test. A lot of teachers and some parents included have charged that with so many standardized tests, what happens is that the teachers just teach to these tests rather than focusing on a whole curriculum, if you will. So how do you respond to that?
I think the downfall for the MAP, or at least the issues that we had to deal with, was just the district didn't do a good enough job of really providing professional development for teachers, for principals, to be able to really understand the MAP. The MAP is not a standards-based assessment. So that was part of it. I think people expected it to be, and it wasn't. What it was is just an indicator of how far a student has progressed. So potentially, a student could be taking things on that assessment that is could be grade levels above or grade levels below. But it was never intended to say, here's where they should be and here's where they're not performing. But it was really more of a level type testing that would adjust itself to a student's performance.
Is the MAP in use this year?
The MAP is in use this year. So it's still being used by the elementary schools, and it's being used to some degree with the high schools. There was a task force that was put together at the end of last year that included teachers to look at the MAP and say, how useful is it for high school age children? And then if there's an opportunity to change some of the procedures that go with it or who has to take the MAP, we were willing to take a look at that.
We're talking with Seattle Public School Superintendent Jose Banda. Seattle Public Schools has submitted to the state two plans to correct long-term problems and how the district deals with special education. And so far, the state's rejected both of those. Right now, $11 million in federal special education funding is at stake. What has gone wrong here?
Well, the first corrective action plan was the one that was rejected and sent back. And so I feel really good about the second corrective action plan. That was a much more comprehensive group team approach. It involved many stakeholders within the district outside of special ed. So I do feel, and I did see that coming to fruition, that it was a well-made plan that had action steps, accountability, timelines. I think that it wasn't so much rejected. It was sent back, and what the OSPI is asking for, the state is asking for, is more. There were 21, I think, points on there that said we need a little bit more information, or give us some examples of how you would go about measuring that. So it's just real detailed information. But I do feel that the actual corrective action plan will be what we need to move our special ed program and our special needs students further along.
One of the issues that was cited in the first return of the plan was sort of the churn in leadership. There has been a lot of turnover and a lot of it predated your arrival in this district. And most recently, I understand the head of the special education unit is going to Lake Washington Schools to do a similar job. Why do you think we have such turnover in management in the district, and what can you do to prevent that?
Yeah, the actual cause for the turnover in leadership with special ed, I'm not really sure. You know, that predates me somewhat, but I know my focus has been, since I came into the district a little over a year ago, was that I wanted to really focus on the special ed students and special ed department and parents, working with our parents, but really make sure that we have a stable leadership. So that's key. The individual that just left our district was the director, not the executive director, but the director is going on to some opportunities at Lake Washington. But we've not only are we looking at a corrective action, but we're looking at a different delivery model. In the last collective bargaining agreement, the one that just approved, we worked on a very collaborative model with the Seattle Educators Association that also included additional staffing to make sure that we're able to deliver on the services and support for students.
So it's going to work, you think, better for both supervisors and the direct line providers?
I believe so. I mean, our
and the kids, of course.
Our staff is working really hard. Our staffs are working really hard in support of students with special needs. And this provides them some additional support in terms of additional bodies, additional people with skill sets that come in to support them. And then we hope that the delivery model is going to be one that, again, is able to target our students and not have them so spread out across our district.
And on a totally different topic, as we hop and skip through all the issues that face you, there are several small community groups that have been in space in Horace Mann. That's the building that used to house Nova High School in the Central District. I know that you have plans to renovate this building and move Nova back from where it's been, but the community groups don't want to leave. They were supposed to leave before the beginning of September. You gave them a little bye. What's going to happen next?
Well, we're continuing to engage the community that is around the Mann School, our African-American community. And so we continue to be committed to those. We've had a series of meetings. We have another one coming up tomorrow where we really want to make sure we understand clearly their concerns and issues. It's not just around the building. I mean, I think the building is part of it, but I think it's more around what is the district doing to support African-American students
right,
who are failing at great rates.
And how are you going to address those concerns that they've raised about that?
Well, I think part of it is engaging our community. You know, when we look at our new strategic plan, one of our goals, we have three main goals, and one of those goals is to make sure that we continue to engage our parents, our community groups in support of our students. We think that developing a strong partnership with the African-American community is going to help us focus on the needs of African-American students and working together. I'm very hopeful that we're going to see some dramatic improvement in those areas.
Related to that, you've cited one of your goals to be equitable access for all kids to all services. I know that there's an arts program that you have implemented this year in partnership with, I believe, the city of Seattle. What other kinds of programs will help you reach that goal?
Well, the arts program is a really good start. I mean, that's one of the things that's really, when you look at the assessment that was done around the arts or access to the arts or lack of access, it really was an equity issue. So we're very proud of being able to roll out the creative approach model into our central region, which is going to touch every school in the central region, starting with that region and then moving into others. But, you know, I think for us, it's continuing, again, to be good listeners, getting out in the community, making sure that we understand all of the issues, because it's not just school issues. They're oftentimes interlinked with community issues, and we want to make sure that we're in tune with that. So the arts, you know, approach, I think, is a good one because it involves community, the city. I think we can take that same model, same approach to other concerns and areas across the district.
I first met you at an arts education forum, and I think I have you on the record promising that you would provide access to arts education for all kids. So this is a step towards it. Very briefly, we're almost out of time, but a year and 1 month here, what do you see as your biggest achievement so far?
I think bringing stability to the district, I think that was one of the major concerns, not only from within the district, but outside the district, was to say, how can we start to build a stable leadership, a leadership that's really focused on the issues, working collaboratively on behalf of our students and our parents. So I feel that that was overall one of the biggest accomplishments. I mean, we did a lot of other things like pass a levy, build a strategic plan, you know, equitable access framework to guide a lot of the work that we're doing now with boundaries and capacity management. But I think overall, really trying to build a stability and really get folks working on the same page. And that goes for our board as well and our staff.
Jose Banda is superintendent of Seattle Public Schools. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
It's The Record. I'm Marcy Silman.